So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Live Ops CEO, Keith Lineback. Hi, Keith. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Adrian?
I am splendid, sir. I'm splendid. So, Keith, welcome to the podcast. But for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and also a bit about the work that you do?
Sure. Well, I'm the CEO of Live Ops, and I've been there for about 7 months now. Mm-hmm. Live Ops is an awesome company, been around for quite a while, founded in 2017. And our whole mission is to let people work around their lives. We're a call center alternative where we have agents who work from home. And that gives us the opportunity to bring really, really skilled resources to bear and solve problems in a different way than you might find in a typical brick and mortar call center.
Excellent.
I'm excited to be here. I've been there for since January.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to the fray, Keith. And I think we were talking offline about, you know, this idea. I mean, I'm really interested in service and experience and how it's this kind of fast evolving sort of space, what with kind of people requirements, skill requirements, you know, work, changing workforce needs, changing customer needs, that whole technology mix and stuff as well. And it seems to me, and we were talking about this before, that there's this emerging issue or realization that there's this human tech kind of mismatch or imbalance in the sort of service experience kind of mix. I mean, do you agree that that's kind of happening, and what's your view on it, and how do you think it's come about?
Well, I think as long as people are still furiously pounding the zero button to try to get to an operator, then somewhere we've missed. Mm. And I know I do that. It drives me crazy. And you think about the different solutions that are put in place in attempt to make the experience the best for an end user. And, you know, we've both been in that position many, many, many times. And it's maddening. Like, I know, for instance, sometimes they use the automated voice deal on airline reservations.
Right.
And when it works, it's pretty slick. I don't have to wait for an agent. And when it doesn't work, it's just infuriating, right? So you're hitting the zero button. And this is what happens. I think companies have made technologies available, not really to make the experience easier, but to make the experience less expensive for them. So it's this battle between cost and the experience. And I don't think it really has to be a battle, right? They should both yield the same result, but there's so many instances where we haven't just got to figure it out yet.
And do you think the because I mean that's interesting because you know there's all sorts of research from all sorts of very sort of people, whether it's Gartner or kind of whoever, that say that if you ask the majority of executives, marketing leaders, you know, board C-level execs, most people would agree that they are largely competing in terms of the service and the experience that they deliver to their customers, and that's the thing that helps them sort of stand out and be competitive. And yet, you know, if that's what it takes to compete, then looking at it from how are we going to do this in as low a cost kind of way as possible, it seems to me that the competitive reality hasn't necessarily caught up with the internal sort of business thinking. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think some of the business thinking turns out to be flawed,
right?
Certainly unintentionally. But here's the thing for me. I have been in this business for a long time in this industry, and I've fallen victim to this myself. We're constantly striving to improve customer satisfaction scores.
Yes.
Oh, we've got net promoter scores and customer sat scores, and stick around after the call if you want to go to the survey. And what we're really trying to see is, did we get rated a 4 or a 5? And then we feel really great. And we've got all kinds of metrics like average handle time, and we've, you know, all these different metrics. And the challenge is, what the customer really wants is an easy experience.
Right.
So average handle time, I think, is a deceiving metric. You can have a short call. You may have even resolve the customer's issue, but they didn't have a very good experience.
Right.
And it wasn't easy. Maybe you got through the call in in 5 minutes, but they got transferred three times. Mm-hmm. Is that easy? No. And what customers really want is easy. And I think we're going to continue to see some growth around this easy score.
Okay.
How much effort does it take on the customer side? And now when you start thinking about, okay, what makes it easy? What am I telling my agents to do?
Right.
In the past, like think about years ago, the story used to be to agents, hey, follow the script and play by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't break any policy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's top of the pyramid rule number one. That's starting to get completely replaced. There's unfortunately probably still some pockets of it. But today we're replacing that read the script and follow the rules with, hey, solve the customer's problem.
Yeah.
And make it easy for them. And now you've really changed the nature of how an agent needs to work. And in that same process, you've changed the skills that you need with an agent. That's a totally different deal. If your job is to read the script, follow the rules, it's a totally different deal if you have to know how to engineer a solution.
Right.
And that's why I think that the resources that are available, the ones that are actually on the other end of the phone by the time, you know, the person listens to all the different options and goes to the website and does all the different things, by the time you get to a person, that person has to have a great set of skills to be able to engineer a solution.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think then that there's been a lot of investment in technology, whether it's people going mobile first or digital first or experimenting with bots and AI and all these different sort of things, and it seems to be rapid advancements in this. Do you think that the human side of the equation or the human element in the mix in terms of the conditions that employees are in and their skills development and recruitment and all those different things that go into that, do you think that's still... Is it playing catch up, or they haven't quite got the match right, or the interface right between the human and tech in many service mixes?
Well, I think it's probably out of whack.
I mean,
you must see it all the time as well.
Yeah.
I think though, when we're looking at this mix, so we introduce a new technology and see, well, how effective was that? And the effectiveness isn't so much about how much did we make the experience easier for the customer. It's how much money did we save?
Right.
Wow, we were able to eliminate, you know, however many calls in the inbound queue. That must be good for us. And maybe it is. And then you experiment with some of these technologies. Some of them work great. Some of them don't work so great. The ones that do work great,
mm-hmm.
you continue to probably roll out and invest. The ones that don't work out, you end up changing, obviously. But you've got this cycle where... there is some experimentation. There's no other way around it. And that cycle also causes lots of glitches in the overall customer experience.
Sure.
Just by definition.
Yeah.
Because we know some of them aren't going to work.
Uh-huh.
So that's the challenge. I mean, when's the last time you were on hold? Are you furiously hitting the zero button trying to get to a person?
Or
are you patient in the process and trying to work through the IVRs?
I am tolerant but impatient, if that makes sense. And so because I understand a little bit about kind of how things kind of work, is it's that's the tolerance thing, but I'm impatient because I'm just thinking, God, you could make this so much easier. And even the kind of little things like, why don't you introduce a callback sort of facility? Because I'll take that. I'll go like, yeah, press whatever number it is for a callback and you call me back and, you know, and we'll take our chances there. But because when I feel like I'm listening to, one, your crap music, and two, kind of thinking about how long I'm going to be waiting for, because many calls don't even give you a time countdown in terms of how long you've got to kind of wait, or
right.
at least an accurate one, or give you a ticket number so you know where you are in the queue, as it were. So there's this lack of information that I think I find I get impatient with. And so I get frustrated. I understand how kind of hard it is to change some of these things, but I just think sometimes you're doing it always surprises me how people are not doing some supposedly simple things that could have some really positive results, which means that I'm just thinking, regardless of what you say, you're not really caring about kind of the services that you deliver because you're not thinking about it from what the customer's real experience is. So that's kind of a mixed response, I guess. But I try and avoid the phone queues as many times as possible.
Yeah, I think we all do. I like how you characterize, though, that you're tolerant but impatient. I think that gets back to this effort,
yeah,
easy score kind of thing, right? You're willing to put up with some of it. You just want it to be, you want it to do what it's supposed to do.
Mm.
So I love the examples around, like, tell me where I am in the process.
Yes.
Right? Just give me a ticket number. Tell me how much time I have left. And why is it that all the music has to be so bad?
Well, I know. I mean, it's all those little kind of things. I mean, because we see it in whether it's, you know, some of those sort of like stuff, like we see it in train stations or airports and things, when you get the time countdown. It's like the provision of information makes, and research and studies have shown this, it makes the process of queuing or waiting seem much shorter. But in the absence of information, we just overestimate how much time that we're spending, and it has such a negative, which is such a negative spiral when it comes to our perception of the experience. And anyway, we could talk about this for hours. It's just like I avoid those things like the plague, but they also stand out when people haven't done those kind of simple things, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So anyway, let's.
And those are simple things.
Yeah, I mean. So anyway, I mean, let's kind of. Another question I wanted to ask is that because there's other people that are talking. I mean, these are almost the tech evangelists, as it were, and I wanted to get your take on this, given that you run a business which is a contact center business, which is kind of full of people, very smart people, but enabled by technology. But there's a lot of people talking about how they want to have service which is completely technology enabled. So my question is that what's your view on that? I mean, do you think there are limits to what technology can do in service, or do you foresee a time when all service will be delivered by some sort of smart piece of technology, or will it depend on the industry?
Well, I think it's going to depend on the industry and the type of calls.
Right.
So if you missed a payment or have a late bill or those types of calls, I've done that. I'm more than happy to just enter my credit card number over the phone and not have to talk to an agent and explain why I forgot to send the check in.
Yeah.
Those are easy. Right? There's other scenarios where you want a person, mm-hmm, and you actually need to hear a little empathy in the process. Let's talk about roadside assistance. Let's say your car breaks down, you call AAA. You want to talk to a bot? I don't.
No.
I want someone to ask me, hey, are you safe?
Mm.
Are you okay? And if mm-hmm not, I can help you out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are times where you might even be a little bit panicked, right? You could be in an unsafe situation.
Sure.
You get a flat tire, run out of gas, something happens with your car, you call for roadside assistance and you need help.
Yeah.
And while those types of interactions, maybe they could be automated, maybe there is a technical solution, I don't think it's a very effective technical solution where someone needs to hear that there's another person on the line that is available and can help them out.
Mm-hmm.
You think 911 calls should be automated? Well, you know, probably not.
No.
I think that there are certainly applications where it's going to make a lot of sense. And we will continue to find more and more technology that's incorporated into these experiences, but it has to be moderated with the type of situation that
and
you find yourself in, and whether you think, and then look at that example and try to figure out where does it make sense to apply technology? What could actually enable the agent in the background to have a really great experience? You talk about roadside assistance. Maybe the systems are slow in the background to make sure that the rental car agency has another car available. If you can speed up those kinds of things in the background, I think you end up with a better experience for the customer as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think given that you kind of, you know, let's talk about kind of your experience with kind of LiveOps kind of directly. I mean, and also because you'll be wrestling with this, a lot of this with kind of clients, given that you kind of offer a lot of, you know, service capability to many kind of clients. I mean, so how are you helping them to sort of strike that right balance of human touch and sort of tech to deliver kind of what they kind of want? I mean, is it, do you go through a method, or is that just more of a kind of conversation and try and better understand it and then kind of feel your way and then adapt as you go along? Or is there a special process that you go through?
Well, it varies by customer, but certainly it's it is about adoption as you go.
Right.
And making sure that we follow practice where we are sharing best practices across industries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think the cross-industry thing is really pretty interesting, as well as the ease of access of that those types of best practices.
Right.
To be able to share what one industry is doing with another industry. And, you know, I found that if you're operating a customer service business, you have a lot of stuff going on. Well, you've got a lot of people.
Yes.
You're responsible for brand image. You know, there's a whole lot. It's a big job. And when you try to stack in operating the day-to-day and making sure that things are running great, and then try to also have your head above the surface and be watching and understanding the best practices, that's hard to do. And one of the things that we're proud about is how we're able to bring best practices to bear and share with our customers different methods that could have a different impact that they would find favorable. And I think our customers respect that and have actually come to expect it from us in many instances.
Excellent. I mean, going back to something that you just kind of mentioned just there, Keith, you actually talked about like a lot of people and maintaining kind of, you know, quality of ops and delivery and all those different things. I mean, am I right in saying that you've got about 20,000 different agents and most of them are home-based? Is that right?
That's right. They're all home-based. And what we found, the reason we put this model together is because really two things. First is we want to give people an opportunity to work around their lives.
Uh-huh.
And that means working from home on a schedule that works for them. And we're able to put people back into the workplace that otherwise just might not be back in the workplace.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're able to put vets back to work, stay-at-home moms and dads, folks that might have extra time during the day and they're looking to generate extra income. They're a great fit. But think about this from a customer's perspective, like our customer's perspective. Mm. We've got access to these incredible skill sets. We've got folks that are retired from the industries that they're in. We have people that have law degrees. We have agents that have MBAs. And we have lots of folks with, you know, I think 81% of the Live Ops Nation has some level of college education. And so it's a different skill set than you're going to find in a brick and mortar. And so we're able to bring that skill set, provide a different experience for the end customer. But here's the other thing. Think about the same person that's trying to run a big customer experience center.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it's retail business and it's during the holiday season. They may spike from having 1,000 agents on the phone to having 7,000 agents on the phone, and they might need that for 2 months.
Yes.
So how are they going to do that? Like go onboard 9,000 people, 6,000, unload a whole bunch of people, be able to offload those people, be able to train them, make sure they're certified and represent their brand appropriately. Wow, that is really, really difficult in a traditional brick and mortar environment.
Sure.
And that's part of the solution we're able to bring to bear. We can ramp up resources, agents against any particular opportunity, as long as they've been through the certification process for that particular customer. And we're able to solve for this flex capacity. Because what happens when you don't have the resources? These are calls that get dropped.
Yes.
And these might be people that, in any scenario, are probably going to have a bad experience, right? They didn't want to be on hold that long, so they dropped.
That you and I
might have
queue.
Also been someone that we're going to buy something else.
Yes,
that's right. You're in the queue, and you're like, I'm not gonna stay on the call. You just hang up. Yeah, I'll call back later when I don't have to wait or when I got more time. Maybe you actually do, and maybe you don't.
Yeah.
So the customer had an opportunity there. They lost an opportunity potentially to sell them something else. They certainly lost an opportunity to confirm in the end user's mind that this brand cares about me. We just lost that opportunity.
Mm.
And so this flex capacity thing is a really, really big issue. It's been an issue for a long time, and it's something that's hard to solve. And that's why, you know, I laugh anymore when I get on the phone and I hear the message, hey, your call is really important to us. Please continue to hold. Really? That's how important it is, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Put me on hold.
So
your next agent is available in 12 minutes.
Yeah. So here's the thing. So because I had another question that and I guess there's two parts, but I guess the first part was about how do you maintain the level of quality? And so I think you in part answer that is that you mentioned a certification process that goes with each, I guess, kind of customer. And it, so all your agents then therefore get qualified for one and or more different types of customers, and then they can flex according to that. Is that right?
That's right. So okay. We have two major categories of certification that we provide to our agents. The first is very specific to the customer program that they're going to be involved with.
Right.
So if they're doing roadside assistance, or if they're doing first notice of loss, or they're taking pizza orders, or whatever it is, they have to understand what systems, what technologies, what the process is, how things get escalated, et cetera, to be able to solve for that particular customer. So we do a bunch of certification around that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second category is a bit more portable across the different types of business, and these are soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage conflict?
Yes.
How do you resolve a negotiation?
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage the different types of objections that you're going to hear in any particular call?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a process for that that's portable. And so we certify folks. In fact, there's so much demand for that, which I find really interesting, like the soft skill part, because there's tons of soft skill training.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is there's not a bunch of soft skill training that is really easy to consume.
Yeah.
And really easy to build into your skill set. Like, how do you practice that and really make it part of what you're doing? You can go to a 2-day, 3-day kind of training session. Who's got time for that?
Sure.
You think about classroom education, and the way people learn today is in much more digestible bites or smaller increments. I think I read the stat that the retention rate out of classroom-based learning when someone is there for more than 3 hours at a time is something like 16%.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, wow, I'm spending a ton of money building curriculum.
Yes.
I'm spending a ton of money on facilitators. And I'm spending a ton of money taking people out of the field to go to these, 1-, 2-, 3-day classes. And really, the retention rate is 16%. So there's a whole re-engineering of learning and curriculum. But that's expensive as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you got a chance to build it from scratch, or you're going to spend the money to re-engineer it, we're finding that the modalities are shifting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all classroom-based. It might be web-based. It might be instructor-led, but it might be virtual. It might be in smaller chunks, and it might be app-based.
Sure.
And so such demand for this, we've actually created a separate offering now.
Okay.
Called Skill Builder, and we've just launched it. And it is a way for us to not only develop our own agents, but lots of times our customers say, wow, you guys have this awesome, we call it our distance learning platform.
Mm-hmm.
We have this awesome distance learning platform, and they see our agents being certified through the platform. And we get lots of requests from companies to be able to use that for their own agents. And so we just ended up making that as a separate offering, which I think is interesting, kind of testimony to like the demand in the marketplace.
Sure.
For that. And you would think that certification and development, that kind of stuff's been around forever. The problem is it just hasn't been around in a very digestible form, I guess.
Sure. I mean, do you think perhaps it's also, it's probably also related to given that you've got these 20,000 agents and effectively they are mostly remote and they're sort of a very large and dispersed group of people, do you think that your approach to the training is therefore kind of influenced by their dispersed kind of nature? And therefore, you have to focus on the right things, and it's more about how you think about them and how you enable them, rather than, if you have a large contact center sort of operation which is in house, and you can, there's a very much a factory farming control kind of ethic, not ethic, there's a wrong word, but it can be almost like a hangover in many cases to how traditional contact centers are run. So, do you think that people are learning from your sort of dispersed experience of managing a dispersed workforce, and that kind of that they see the good that comes from that, and therefore they're kind of importing it into their business?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I'm not sure I've ever heard learning and hangover put together so eloquently. That was profound. I think exactly right, though. Everybody's working from home.
Yeah.
And we have people across the country. And so we have to be very, very intentional about how it is that we certify and develop folks.
Yes.
And that forced a better solution.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have the crutch of, hey, let's just put everybody in the training room and we'll have them sit there for 12 hours and, we'll hope they learn everything.
Yes.
So we built this distance learning platform to solve for that out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same thing, like around collaboration. When you're in a physical office building, there's less emphasis on how do you get people to collaborate because they're working around each other all day.
Yes.
And they run into each other at the water cooler and they're able to talk about whatever there is on their mind. But we have to be very intentional about the collaboration capabilities that we put in place. And I think that type of necessity really drives much better solutions that then you look back at the traditional providers who are like, hey, that works great. I could use that as
sure.
well. In fact, I'd like to use it. And that's exactly what's happened okay. for our Skill Builder product because we built a better widget.
Yes.
And now companies want to use it back in their own brick and mortar centers.
Yeah, and it's fascinating kind of how people can use some things that are kind of quite tangential to almost influence kind of more rigid kind of traditional kind of forms. But anyway, so you're just new in the job, been there since January. I think you've probably gone through your 6 month kind of honeymoon period. So what's the next big thing for kind of live ops? I mean, is it just grow the workforce, kind of go from 20 to 40? What's the big next big thing for you guys? What's exciting you right now?
Well, the size of the Live Ops Nation is kind of a byproduct of how effective we are in getting our message into the marketplace.
Sure.
So Live Ops is 17 years old, but we had a 7 or 8 year period where we were focused almost exclusively on the technology that we ran the business on and mm-hmm. making that available and trying to commercialize it as a SaaS platform. We divested that, sold it off at the end of 2015 or beginning of 2016. And so now we really have this great opportunity to rethink how is it that we want to go to market? How do we really provide an incredible experience for our customers
mm-hmm.
with really, really disruptive information that isn't available from other providers?
Mm-hmm.
How do we create an incredible experience for our agents?
Mm-hmm.
I think our agents are awesome, and unfortunately, they've been neglected over the past many years, and so we're investing there significantly to make a better experience for them as fast as we can.
Awesome.
And then we've got some work to do internally on some of our own infrastructure. But I think the development of people is really, really critical. And we're super excited by the Skill Builder platform that we just rolled out as an independent offering to make that available for customers to be able to help their own resources develop. You think about why do people leave their jobs? You know, some of it is probably pay related. But I think all the studies say people want to learn.
Yes.
They want to develop. They want to grow personally and professionally. And so we just created this great platform. We've made it available now and really looking forward to seeing the adoption rate of that because, you know, I just think it's a great way not only to help people work around their lives, but also have a great experience while they do that and feel like they're growing professionally and personally in the process.
Excellent. I mean, I'm really heartened to hear you speak the way that you speak about your kind of people because I have a view that the contact center kind of agents or the people that are in that sort of space have been a really important part of customer service and customer experience and branding and reputation and growth and all of those kind of good things, but haven't necessarily had the recognition that they truly deserve. And I think there's a whole bunch of rock stars that work in that sort of space that could really benefit from a little, you know, a lot of limelight. So I find it really heartening that you can like say kind of what you're saying about your people and improving their experience and things. I mean, that's great. But the thing I also wanted to ask you about is, you know, thinking about thinking about sort of service experience, you kind of, you know, growing out in the market and stuff. I mean, what, from your perspective, what are the things that you're most excited about when it comes to kind of service and experience? And also, what are the things that are also starting to kind of worry you? Are you going, oh, you have to keep an eye on that because that's possibly not great? And that's not necessarily to do with the business, but just general kind of market developments.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Met with all of our customers, and I've met with lots of prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that is most surprising to me mm-hmm. is that they think that the flex economy is kind of growing, and even using the word flex economy and the gig workers, right? That's kind of new terminology, but it's been around for quite a while, and it's really gaining momentum.
Sure.
And this is what is really exciting. There's some interesting research that's been done just in the last, you know, in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the findings from McKinsey is that 33% of the companies that were part of this survey that employ over 100,000 people said that a third of their workforce will be made up of the flex workers in the next 5 years, up from 5% today.
Yeah.
So really dramatic shift. If you look at the profile of workers with any company, and today where people are, you know, geez, we think of our parents for sure. You join a company, you go work for IBM, you stay there, you know, forever, right?
Yeah.
Stay there for a long time. Some people build their whole career at one company.
Mm-hmm.
You think about that today, wow, it's so different with people moving between lots of companies. And that has now evolved into, well, I'm not even going to go work for a company. I'm going to go work for myself. And I've got the opportunity now with a good, rich set of skills to be able to be employable as a flex worker that fits my schedule and let me work around my life.
Sure.
It's a dramatic, dramatic shift. And I think, you know, what kind of alarms me is lots of companies are still sorting out. They're almost unaware that that capability exists.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's a tidal wave just outside of what you can see, like it's 10 miles offshore.
Sure.
And it's really big. And it's going to crash the coastline. And it's going to be hugely disruptive. And I see a lot of companies that just don't know the tidal wave's coming.
Which is
going to be, you know, people trying to react to it. It is fascinating.
Yeah, no, I think it's fascinating because it's actually kind of what you're talking about is when a lot of times when people talk about disruption, they talk about technological disruption. But what you're talking about is there's disruption that's coming. It could be this huge blind spot, which is there's kind of societal, personal, worker kind of preference disruption kind of coming, and people aren't necessarily paying attention to it.
Yeah, so in the workforce, you're exactly right. That's what I'm describing. And then think of the technology implications of that.
Mm.
So let's say a company today has 3% of its workforce that is part of this flex worker deal. And let's say they're in the retail business and they've got, you know, a lot of variation in their staff in terms of, you know, volumes of staff. And now they're going to grow to a point where maybe 20, 30, 40% of their you know, quote unquote employee population, their worker population is part of this flex workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you onboard those folks?
Sure.
How do you offboard those folks? How do you certify and develop these people? How do you provide governance? You know, if you look at like the seven spokes of all the things you have to do to manage an employee population, no one knows how to do that today in a flex workforce at scale.
Sure.
So the technology opportunity that we think we're in a position to be able to capitalize on is helping companies manage that flex workforce and all those different attributes as the flex workforce becomes such a significant portion of their overall, you know, worker profile. Now that's a huge opportunity. We're going to be able to do that for our own workforce today,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to be able to make those types of services available as it becomes a greater need in the marketplace. And I don't think there's really anybody else that's in that position, and that is, you know, that's super exciting. You go from being this call center alternative with this really, really capable flex workforce to helping companies shift from what we call the enterprise to the flexiprise.
Nice.
And who's going to be there to help them manage that?
Right? No.
That's what we're going to be able to do because, you know, the flexiprise is coming. They're going to need the capabilities.
That's very cool. Very exciting. So that brings me to my last couple of questions. Now, the first one is a little bit of selfish kind of market research on my part, because I wrote a book last year called How to Wow. Came out in April last year with kind of Pearson. It's done kind of pretty well. But what I've been doing ever since on these interviews is asking everybody that I speak to for their perspective on what wow service or experience means to them. So Keith, I'd be really interested to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, it's really simple for me, Adrian. Make it easy.
Don't
just try to seek out a customer SAT score. Make it easy.
Perfect. And then that brings me then, Keith, to my favorite question, but also the final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
I sure would. Skill Builder is our new offering to the marketplace that allows people to learn in the modalities that adults learn most effectively today. Smaller, digestible bites in formats that are more easy to consume. We just made that available. It's a super offering. The demand for it is off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really hope folks have a chance to take a look at it. We'd love to tell people about it.
Keith, thank you for that. I'll make sure that we get, when we get that all edited up and published, I'll get it all linked up and give Skill Builder and yourselves at LiveOps a big shout out. I just want to say thank you for both sharing your time and your experience with us today. That's been great.
Okay, thanks, Adrian. It was great talking to you. I look forward to catching up again.